The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Evil exists. We all agree on that, don't we? I mean, we read about it, hear of it, sometimes witness it. Even if we are that unfortunate, have it done to ourselves. But what is it? The dictionary defines evil as anything impairing happiness or welfare, or depriving of good. If we accept, at least for now, this definition, then who of us, in the course of a lifetime, has not done evil, or darkly thought of doing it? I'm waiting. Who?
Anyone can do it.
I can't.
Don't be silly. Of course you can.
But how?
First, you have to believe you can do it.
And then?
Then? Why, then you go ahead and do it.
Our mystery drama, The Evil Eye, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Elspeth Eric and stars Mandel Kramer and Carol Tytel. It is sponsored in part by Sunkissed Growers Incorporated. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Call 1-800-528-1234, Best Western.
You can call Best Western any day or night.
We'll get you a room that will be just right.
Around the world, lodging for you when you want Best Western. Here's all you do.
Call 1-800-528-1234. Best Western, 1-800.
When an orange says sun-kissed on the outside, you know it's juicy and sweet on the inside.
Eat sun-kissed sweet, it'll knock you off of your feet. It's so fresh and juicy, plump and a heavenly. Eat sun-kissed sweet.
Sink your teeth into a big, bursting, sweet, succulent, scintillating, juicy, vibrant, luscious, lip-smacking, mouth-watering, tongue-tickling sun-kissed orange.
Eat sun-kissed sweet.
Delta is ready when you are. Delta is ready to fly.
Delta is ready to show you a good time. To Florida. We've got 10 good flight times a day to Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and 7 go nonstop. If you're going to Tampa, St. Pete, we'll show you the most flight times on any airline, including 3 nonstops. And to Orlando, we've lined up 7 flight times, with 4 going nonstop. What's more, we'll show you a good deal on your fare, with thrifty night coaches and supreme super savers, day and night, to all 4 places. For details, call Delta or see your travel agent. And next trip to Miami or Fort Lauderdale, to Orlando or Tampa, St. Pete, fly the Good Time Airline.
Delta is ready when you are.
I intimated at the start that this is to be a story of evil, and before long, you will realize that I did not exaggerate. Cheating, lying, stealing, such things are commonplace. We read about them daily. Then there is betrayal, slander, perjury. Oh, the number is endless. And what is worse, all lurk in every human heart. Listen to the words of Blaise Pascal, who lived and wrote more than 300 years ago. Evil is easy and has infinite forms.
It's a terrible thing being a woman. The only thing that's worse is being a successful woman. You've heard of me, I'm sure. Charity Ormsby. You've certainly read one of my books. More likely, you've read them all. I'm the best-known female writer in the country. Of course, few know that my real name is Louise Bates. married nearly 20 years to John Bates, mother of two, both boys, both, thank the Lord, away at school. At any rate, when the events I'm about to relate came about, there was no one in the house but John and myself.
Louise? Louise? It's me.
Hmm? John?
All right to come in?
Oh, yes. Come in. Come in.
Good morning, dear.
Oh, I've waked up to better ones.
Brought you some coffee.
Hmm. What time is it?
It's a little early, but I have to get to the office. You know, income tax time is coming up. Everybody wants their returns. So I thought before I left, I'd bring you your coffee. Would you like me to pour it?
Yeah, I guess so. Oh, I was sleeping so soundly. As though I were in my tomb.
Depressed, are you? Here, here's your coffee.
Oh, thank you, dear.
You'll perk up as soon as you get back to work.
I suppose so.
You always do.
I do, don't I?
Always. Well, I really should be getting started.
Oh, it's the dreadful hiatus between two books that gets me down. The feeling that it's all over, that my talent is all used up. I'll never write again, never have another idea. You can't imagine how depressing it is.
No, I guess I can't.
Ah, you're lucky to be an accountant, John.
Am I? Yes, I suppose in some ways I am. Speaking of which, I really better get going.
Oh. Oh, will you answer that for me, will you, dear?
All right. Hello?
Is Miss Ormsby there?
Yes. Yes, she's here.
Or should I say Mrs. Bates? Is this Mr. Bates?
Yes, it is.
This is Kathy Corrigan, Mr. Bates.
Oh, yes. How are you, Miss Corrigan?
Oh, you know. Could I speak with your wife?
Well, can you hold on, Miss Corrigan, and I'll see if she's able to talk?
I'll hold on.
It's your agent, dear.
So I gathered.
Can you talk to her?
I can try. Oh, don't go just yet, John. I need support.
Well, it...
Hello, Kathy?
I was just wondering if you're working.
No, I'm not working.
When do you think you will be, Louise?
Oh, for heaven's sake, Kathy, don't you know anything about my habits after all these years?
Well, I just thought
about... No, you didn't. You didn't think at all. You know perfectly well I can't put a word on paper until the whole thing suddenly takes shape in my mind. Till that happens, I'm helpless as a baby.
Well, when do you think something will take shape?
Oh, how do I know? I can't plan to have it take shape, you know. I can't command it to take shape. I can't just trick it or seduce it or bribe it. I can't...
All right, Louise. I understand.
Well, then why do you insist...
I thought you might like to know that Benita Barlow has just been given $1 million advance.
What?
On her next book.
Benita Barlow got $1 million advance?
Yes, she did.
Thanks for calling. How about that? How about that? That overdressed, overblown frump, that no-talent Benita Barlow has just...
I know, I heard.
$1 million. $1 million.
You're better than she is, Louise. You're much better than
I
she is.
I know that I'm better. I know that.
You're the best, Louise.
I know I'm the best. But do those nincompoop publishers know it? No, all they know is Benita Barlow. So she gets all the advertising, she gets the interviews, she gets all the fanfare, all the whoop-de-doo. I could kill that woman.
Oh, now, darling, you don't mean that.
I do mean it. I could kill her. Trouble is, she's in England, and I'm here. Then... it happened. The idea for my next book sprang into my head, full-blown, the way it had always done before. Oh, what a joy. What a relief. After months of sterility, I was ready to write again. In 10 days, my public would have what they awaited so breathlessly. I could scarcely wait to tell John. It'll be... all about a beautiful black woman and a white man and their enduring love for each other.
Do we know any black women, Louise?
Oh, that's beside the point. I can fantasize it. I can fantasize anything.
Of course you can.
I shall call it Dark Luster.
Good title.
All right, now, John, you know what you have to do. I must have 10 full days to complete it. I shall shut myself in my room. Now, you know how it goes. We've been through this before.
Yes,
now,
but Louise...
Now, you will stay home. You will have to cook your own meals.
Well, that part's all
now,
right.
You will eat them by yourself.
Yes, but you,
you
know...
You will sit by the window, the way you always have, to stop anyone who comes to the door. Now, you will have to hold the phone in your lap so you can answer it the second it starts to ring. Oh, and if that dog down the block starts to bark, you will silence it. And if the people next door play those awful records, you will make them stop.
But Louise,
Oh, it will be heavenly.
Shall I answer it?
No, I'll take it. This one last time. The last call I take for 10 delicious days. Hello?
Louise, this is Kathy.
Kathy, the most beautiful thing has happened.
Louise?
I am starting a new book. You're the last person I'll speak to for 10 whole days. Then you will have the completed manuscript.
Louise,
it's
I'm
going
calling
to be called Dark Luster.
Louise, and have you heard about Benita Barlow?
Look, it's all about this...
Louise!
Huh?
Benita Barlow is very ill. Very, very ill.
Oh? Is she?
It's a very rare disease. It's always fatal. She can't live long.
Is that so?
I just thought I should tell you. Well, good luck with the book. I'll be hearing from you.
In 10 days. Precisely. Huh. Benita Barlow's come down with some strange sort of disease. It's terminal. The news about Benita Barlow made hardly any impression on me at all. The concept for my new novel was burgeoning within me, and I could scarcely wait to begin again. I wrote feverishly. The words leapt onto the page. My fingers could barely keep up with the racing of my brain. For 9 full days, I wrote, only taking time for an hour or two of sleep here and there, now and then. And even as I slept, the words, the blessed words ran pell-mell through my mind. Then, on the 10th day... Oh, stop. Stop. Who can be banging on that door? John! John, for pity's sake, will you make it stop?
Is anybody home?
John! John, will you make him go away? John, go to the door! John!
Oh, please, is there someone home?
Oh, who in the world is that? You! You down there! You at the door, will you go away?
I just...
You are doing a terrible thing. You are interrupting an act of creation. You are a dreadful, ignorant person. A desecrator, a vandal, a profaner on the altar of art. Look, you dreadful man, you don't deserve to live. I slammed down the window, trembling with rage. That creep. That ignorant, selfish, stubborn creep. I crawled into my big, comforting easy chair, curled myself into a ball, and huddled there, cursing him and shivering as though I'd been smitten with a fever. I was exhausted, drained. After a while, I heard the outside door open. Who could it be but John? My loyal, devoted husband, who had promised to defend me against such intrusions. Shaking with anger, I went downstairs. John was just coming in. And where? Where, if you will be so kind as to tell me, have you been?
Why, at the office, Louise.
At the office. at the office. While I was draining the blood from my veins to finish my novel, my masterpiece, while I was 40 pages from the ending, you were at the office.
Well, there was so much work to do.
Work? You call what you do work?
Well, tax returns.
You know very well that for these 10 days, your work was here, to silence the phone, to drive away callers, to keep that dog from barking, to make those people stop playing their dreadful rock and roll. Well, you know what you've done now, don't you?
Louise.
You have ruined my novel. That's what you've done. It's dead. It's finished. It's over.
Please.
I am going upstairs and tear it to shreds. Then I shall burn it.
Writers are indeed strange creatures with strange habits of work. What suits one will not do for another. Some write longhand, others type. Some work early in the morning, others only late at night. Some pace the floor, others sit and meditate. Some compose rapidly, others with infinite slowness. Yes, writers are strange. Quite as strange as the rest of us. I'll be back shortly with Act Two.
For the National Association of Realtors, this is Greg Morris with On the Home Front. Selling your home calls for many important decisions. What's a fair asking price? What's the best way to attract buyers? How much fixing up should you do? Faced with questions like these, you can easily forget some little things, like keeping the yard clean and the closets uncluttered. But these are important also. By presenting a neat, clean house in good repair, you show your house has been cared for, that it's worth buying. Remember, the decision to buy a new home is made with both the head and the heart. And the more presentable your home is, the easier it'll be for the buyer to fall in love with. For more tips, talk to a realtor. Realtors support equal opportunity in housing. They know your market and want to help you sell your home quickly and easily. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors, working for America's property owners.
The following is a paid political announcement.
Why is Appellate Judge John J. Sullivan the best qualified candidate for the Illinois Supreme Court? He has the best appellate court record of all candidates and is the only one honored by lawyers for his work as an appellate judge. He was an outstanding trial lawyer, the only candidate elected to fellowships in the American College of Trial Lawyers and the International Academy of Trial Lawyers. He is independent, never a member of any political organization. He is a past president of the Chicago Bar and Illinois Trial Lawyers Associations. He is the only candidate to receive the award of merit and honor from the Cook County Bar Association. He is highly recommended by the Chicago Bar Association.
I am John J. Sullivan, a presiding justice of the appellate court. As the independent candidate with the best appellate court record, I earnestly ask your vote on March 18th.
Paid for by Citizens for Sullivan.
Driven at night past houses lighted from within, perhaps brightly enough to make visible the figures of the inhabitants? Have you tried to imagine what they were doing, what they were saying or not saying, what they were feeling or not feeling? I wonder what you would have imagined had you seen the persons of John and Louise Bates as they confronted each other on a certain singular night.
I'm John Bates. And I know I shouldn't have done what I did. But I got so bored. So unutterably bored just sitting on the front window seat holding the phone in my hands, listening for music from next door or the sound of a dog barking down the block. I wasn't away for more than a half hour. Maybe not that long. And when I returned, I let myself into the house as quietly as possible.
And where? Where, if you will be so kind as to tell me, have you been?
Why, at the office, Louise.
While I was draining the blood from my veins, you were at the office. You know what you've done with your trip to the office, don't you? You've killed my novel. It's dead. It's finished. It's over. I am going upstairs and tear it to shreds. Then I shall burn it.
Now, Louise, don't do that. Don't do anything while you're upset like this. Now, tell me what happened.
What happened was that some idiot came to the door and banged on it. Banged and banged and banged. I was 40 pages away from finishing my book, and this monstrous little man marched up our front steps and stood at our front door and banged on it.
What did he want?
How do I know what he wanted? To come into the house, I suppose.
Well, you didn't let him in.
Let him in? I opened the window and I shouted at him. I told him at the top of my voice that he was desecrating the temple of art, that he was an ignorant clod and a terrible man who shouldn't be allowed to live. Then I slammed down the window and I waited for you to show up. And now that it's too late, here you are.
I'm sorry, Louise.
Now, I'm going upstairs and destroy my novel.
Wait a minute. What did this man look like, the one who came to the door?
Oh, how should I know? All I could see was the top of his head. No, he had red hair, I remember that.
Long red hair?
Hmm. Down to his shoulders. Disgusting.
Might have been Stephen Bennett.
Who's Stephen Bennett?
I do his income tax.
Well, I hope they soak him plenty. He destroyed my work. Now I am going upstairs.
You want me to answer that?
No. You're too late. I'll answer it. Yes? Hello? Oh, you. No, not well at all. Nothing's going well. No. How's that? Oh. Well, thanks for telling me. Not that it matters, but thanks anyway. That was Kathy Corrigan.
Oh? What did she want?
Just to tell me Benita Barlow is dead. You know what, John? Maybe I won't destroy my book after all.
I lied to Louise when I said I went to the office. I didn't. I was with a girl. Yes, a girl. I'd been seeing her for quite a while. I felt guilty as hell about it, but I couldn't help myself. I'm in love with her. And I think she's in love with me. And sometimes it's hard to tell. Anyway, after Louise decided not to tear up her novel, I stayed around the house for a couple of days just to make sure that, you know, that she was all right. Then I went to see this girl. I had to. Kathy, I don't know what's going on at home.
With Louise, you mean?
Of course, Louise.
Louise is home to you, isn't she?
Well, of course. I'm married to her.
I see. Okay, go on.
Kathy, when you called and told her that Benita Barlow was dead, she decided not to tear up her novel.
Was she going to do that?
Yes. I mean, you don't know about Stephen Bennett, do you?
Never heard of him.
Well, he's a client of mine. It seems that he tried to see me in my office and I wasn't there because, you know...
Because you were here.
That's right. Stephen Bennett was trying to see me because he was worried about his taxes, among other things. I mean, he'd given me some false figures and he was afraid that he was going to be found out and he wanted my help. Well, I wasn't at the office, so he went to my house. And Louise was almost finished with her novel. There was even an out-of-order sign above the doorbell. I mean, I put it there myself. So he started banging on the door. I mean, the man was really desperate. And Louise leaned out the window and she hollered at him. I mean, she told me all this herself. Called him an ignorant clod and a terrible man and, you know, stuff like that. And I guess he just finally gave up and went away.
Yes? So?
Kathy, it's in the paper this morning. Steve Bennett is dead. He took an overdose of something, and he's dead.
Well, I'm sorry about that, but after all, he isn't a close friend or anything like that.
I don't know, but I mean, you know, if I'd been in my office, or even at home where I was supposed to be, maybe he wouldn't have done it.
Oh, nonsense.
I mean, I was here with you.
Where you were or weren't has nothing to do with what happened.
But it's my fault.
Will you stop taking credit for something you couldn't help? You're just being arrogant.
Arrogant? Me?
It's Louise.
Louise? What about Louise?
First Benita Barlow, now this Stephen Bennett. Both dead.
But Louise didn't know either one of them.
That doesn't mean a thing. Not when you have the capacity for evil. The evil eye.
What?
I'm sure you've heard of it, the evil eye.
Yeah, I've heard of it, but I mean, well, what is it, I mean?
It is the power to destroy whatever stands in your way.
Oh, no, I mean...
Oh, yes, yes.
Kathy, you mean Louise can... You mean she can destroy people?
Well, she has done it, hasn't she?
On purpose?
I don't know. I don't know precisely how it works. I wish I did.
But what do I... I mean, what am I supposed to do?
I'm not sure. Let me think.
I mean, what if she decides to destroy me? Or you?
That is what I'm thinking about. Look, John, you said she didn't destroy her book.
Right after you called about Benita Barlow, she said maybe she wouldn't.
You have got to insist that she finish it.
Insist?
She must have felt such a great surge of power when she heard about Benita Barlow. Now, you tell her about Stephen Bennett. If we can direct all that psychic energy into her work, if she'll finish the book... Who knows? Who knows what might happen?
I can tell you, my head was in a whirl. My wife had the evil eye? Louise? Louise had the evil eye? The power to do away with people if she didn't like them, if they interfered with her? I mean, well, it just seemed absurd and impossible. Still... Benita Barlow and Stephen Bennett? I mean, it did seem so, you know, so odd and really horrible. But Kathy had said there might be hope if I could persuade Louise to finish her novel. Insist on it, she said. Me insist. I'd never insisted on anything in my whole life. Still, I could try. Louise, you didn't tear up your novel, did you?
Not yet.
Well, don't do it, Louise.
It's mine to do with whatever I choose.
No, listen to me.
I prefer not to discuss it, John, if you don't mind.
But I do mind. I think we have to talk about
it. There's nothing to talk about. If my novel stays unfinished, it's your fault. Remember that. If you had stayed where you belonged and protected me from the outside world...
I know that.
For the 10 full days, that novel would have been completed, but no... No, you had to run off to your stupid little office and that stupid little man...
Stephen Bennett.
Whoever he was. He interrupted my concentration and he ruined the whole thing.
He's dead, Louise.
Oh? Is he?
Yes. He took an overdose of something. And he's dead.
Was he a friend of yours?
Well, he was a client.
You seem so upset.
Well, he came here looking for
well,
me.
If you had been here...
If you had let him in...
What are you getting at, John? Are you trying to tell me it's my fault the man overdosed himself?
I don't think you know how powerful you are, Louise.
I'm only powerful if you're here to protect me.
But I can't be here all the time.
Well, no one's asking you to be here all the time. 10 days out of a whole year, you call that all the time?
Please finish the book, Louise. I mean, if you don't...
If I don't what?
Well, you remember Benita Barlow.
That English woman, what about her?
She died.
Oh, Benita Barlow died of some mysterious disease. I didn't know her. I've never even met her.
Well, she was your rival.
So what?
Well, right here in this very room, I heard you say it. You said I could kill her. You said it twice, Louise. I was right here. Right here with you when you said it. I could kill her, you said.
Well, that doesn't mean I did. How could I?
It's impossible.
Not if you have the evil eye.
What's that? What's the evil eye?
It's the power to hurt people. Just by wanting to hurt them. Even people you don't know. Even people who live thousands of miles away.
You think that I have this power?
I think maybe you have it. And I'm afraid of it, Louise. I couldn't tell whether I was making any impression on her or not. After all, I didn't really know what I was talking about. I just put words together and hoped that they would make sense. They sounded all right when I said them, but I couldn't tell what effect they were having on my wife. Her dark eyes opened wider and wider. Her cheeks got paler and paler. And she walked out of the room without answering me. I waited downstairs, hoping to hear the sound of a typewriter, but I heard nothing.
Is that you, John?
Yes, dear.
Come in here, will you?
Right away.
Did you have a hard day?
Well, you know, it's income tax time. Everybody's kind of anxious.
Yes, that's what I am. Anxious. Terribly, terribly anxious. Agonizingly anxious.
Well,
paralyzingly anxious.
Maybe if you were to, you know, finish your book.
I try. I sit there in front of the typewriter and I stare at it. I sit and I stare. But I can't even put my fingers on the keys. I can't even lift my hands to put the paper in the roller. But I do try, John. Maybe it doesn't sound like it, but I do try. Really, I do. Really, I do. Believe me. You do believe me, don't you?
Louise, if you would just say to yourself, I can do it. And I will do it.
I can. I will.
That's all you need. The power and the will.
The power and the will.
That's all.
I could try again.
Of course you could. Oh, by the way, Louise, coming home, I stopped to talk to the people down the block. You know, the one with the dog?
Uh-huh.
He died. The dog died. The people said it was, you know, old age. He just laid down in the sun and he died.
The dog died?
Yes. And you know the couple next door, the ones with all that rock and roll all the time? They're getting a divorce. The second I stopped talking, Louise gave me a peculiar look. Then she got up and left the room. She went upstairs. I really didn't know what I'd said to make her do that, but a minute later, I heard something that made me not happy exactly, but very, very relieved.
Do you remember what I quoted to you towards the beginning of our show? The words of Blaise Pascal, evil is easy and has infinite forms. Think what has happened so far. And we've only presented two acts. A woman dies, a man dies, a dog dies, a marriage dies. What's left for Act 3? I'll be back shortly.
Premiering Thursday night, CBS Television presents Alex Haley and Norman Lear's exciting new series, Palmerstown, USA. In the South of 1935, David Hall, a young white boy, and Booker T. Freeman, a young black boy, aren't supposed to be best friends. In their parents' view, the rules are clear.
You gotta be careful of disturbing the fine balance between the white folks and the colored folks in this town.
Palmerstown, USA, a special two-hour premiere, Thursday night at 8, 7 Central on CBS.
Minutes seem like hours when you sometimes have trouble getting to sleep. Wouldn't you like to get to sleep fast? Announcing new Unisom. A different generation sleep aid. The only one with doxylamine. To our knowledge, Unisom is the only non-prescription sleep aid proven effective in clinical tests. When you sleep better, you feel better. For occasional sleeplessness, take new Unisom. Use only as directed.
We'll be right back.
WBBM Chicago.
If you tell me that you have never had the urge to destroy someone, I shall not believe you. The desire starts in each one of us at an early age. It resides in the tiny infant who, if his strength matched his fury, could destroy the world. As he grows, the wish is modified, tamed, deflected, but it never really dies.
I'm Kathy Corrigan, and I'm the best literary agent in the country. To begin with, I have impeccable taste. That's just for starters. Then I have terrific contacts, which I've cultivated over the years. And finally, I'm a super salesperson. That about sums it up, I think. Why I should have fallen for an insignificant little man like John Bates, I'll never know. But I had, and that's that. Every time the phone rang, I hoped desperately it would be John and not his frightful wife. Hello?
Kathy, this is Louise.
Oh, yes, Louise, how are you?
Kathy, I have great news for you.
Tell me, can't wait.
I finished the novel. Kathy, did you hear me? I've completed my book.
What, Louise, that's wonderful.
I didn't think I could. Things have been so peculiar around here.
What things?
Oh, well, I don't have time to go into all that right now. Just, things, you know. Well, they threw me off my stride for a while, but now I think I've got them licked.
Well, when can I read the book?
Well, I could bring it over to your office right now, except that I am exhausted. Couldn't you send someone for it?
Why don't you ask John to bring it over?
Oh, I don't know.
I really don't have anybody to send.
Well, John's really responsible for my finishing it, in a way. Although he's the one who kept me from finishing it weeks ago. Oh, I don't
know. John's always so obliging, I'm sure.
Oh, okay. I'll send John. Oh, Kathy, I can't wait till you read it.
Neither can I. Tell John to hurry it up. Of course, I could have sent somebody. I could have sent my secretary. I could have hired a messenger. But I wanted to see John, and I wanted to see him right away. To find out how he had accomplished the miracle of making Louise finish her book. I couldn't concentrate on my work waiting for him to arrive. John.
Hello, Kathy. Girl said to go right in.
Oh, you got a kiss for me?
You bet.
Okay, now, got the manuscript?
Right here.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the right weight. Oh, sit down, John.
Listen, I got a lot of work all piled up. Well, just for a minute.
I want to know how you did it.
You mean how I got Louise to finish the book?
Of course that's what I mean.
Oh, it was easy.
Well, how did you do it? It couldn't have been that easy.
Well, after you told me about the evil eye, I got to thinking about it. And I told Louise that she had it.
You didn't.
Wasn't I supposed to?
I mean,
I pointed out that Benita Barlow had died after Louise had said she could kill her. She did say that, you know.
Yeah, go on.
And Stephen Bennett, the man who came to the house and banged on the door, the one that she was so furious with, he died.
Go on.
Well, none of that made very much of an impression on her. Nothing did until I told her about the dog.
The dog? What dog?
The dog, the one down the block that barks sometimes. And I told her about the couple next door.
What couple?
A couple that play their rock and roll records so loud. They're getting a divorce.
That's all you did?
That's about it. Listen, I better get back to work.
John?
Hmm?
I love you. You know that.
Do you, Kathy? Because I love you.
Oh. Look, don't you think we ought to tell Louise?
About us?
She has a right to know. She's got to know sometime.
No, she doesn't. No, she hasn't. Believe me, she doesn't want to know. She wouldn't like knowing. She'd hate it. No, she mustn't know. It would be very bad if she knew.
All right. All right, darling.
I mean, it would be just terrible if she knew.
You run along, sweetheart. And you tell Louise I'll call her as soon as I finish the novel. Poor John. So timid, so fearful. Afraid of everything and everybody. frightened little mouse of a man. But I loved him. And he had accomplished the remarkable feat of persuading his wife to finish her book. A book on which I expected, along with her, to make a great deal of money. I stayed up half the night reading it. In the morning, I made a date with her for luncheon.
Well, tell me. Tell me. It's great, isn't it? I tell you, Kathy, this is going to be the best yet. A smash. A blockbuster. Tell me, am I right? Of course I'm right. After all these years, Kathy, I know these things. This book is going to light up the sky.
Louise.
You did read it, didn't you?
Of course I read it. You know I read it.
Well.
I stayed up half the night reading it. I told you that on the phone.
Well,
what?
Am I right?
No. No, Louise, you're not right, at least in my opinion.
I am right. I'm always right about my own work. This is a great book. This is a great book.
Louise, I was just giving you my opinion. Now, everybody's entitled to have an opinion, don't you agree?
Not when it's the wrong opinion.
Louise, how did you happen to finish it?
John told me I could.
Oh?
He said, Louise, you have the power and the will. And I went upstairs and finished it.
And that's all?
That was enough. After all, if I'd had the power and the will to do what I'd already done...
And what was that?
Oh, never mind. The point is, I had it. I had the power and the will. He told me I had it, and I had it. But of course, I'd known all along I had it, but nobody ever told me I had it. You see, then when he told me I had it, then I knew that I had it. All I needed was somebody to tell me I had it, don't you see?
I don't know that I do, Louise.
Then I'm sorry for you.
Really?
Deeply. Profoundly sorry.
Really? Well, let me tell you something, Louise. It is a cheap, trashy book. Cheap and trashy.
You.
And not that all your books haven't been cheap and trashy, Louise, because they have been. But you believed in them so utterly, something came through. People who read them came to believe that life could be sweet and wonderful and full of joy and love and light, without pain, without suffering, where goodness and sweetness were rewarded and meanness and cruelty were punished.
Well, I believe that.
Well, yes. You're such a fool, I'm sure you do believe it. And because it's what everybody wants to believe, your books sell like crazy. Love conquers all. That's all your book says. That's all any of your books have ever said.
Well, it's true.
How would you know?
What? What did you say?
I said, how would you know about love?
Well, I know all about it.
Well, nobody could tell it from your books. They are sleazy and phony and trumped up.
Trumped up?
With some sex thrown in every 50 pages just to show you're with it. And even those parts aren't very good. They're as phony and full of fakery as the rest of it.
All right, you shut up. Just shut
you
up.
You asked me.
I will never ask you again. You can bet on that. What's more, I'll make you eat your words, Kathy. You wait
Look,
and
I
see.
I only said what I believe.
What is it? What? Kathy! Kathy, what is it? What happened? Kathy, do you want a glass of water? What can I do? Kathy!
No, it's all right. It's all right. I was just... joking on my words.
You mean that I did that to you? I did it?
You're a very powerful woman, Louise. Very, very powerful indeed. It was true. I hadn't taken a bite of food. We hadn't even ordered. But the power of Louise's hatred, her malevolence toward me, had brought on one of those helpless fits of coughing that till they stop, you think you're going to die. It was only when I realized, even as I was gasping for breath, that it was the evil eye of Louise Bates that was threatening my very life. It was only then I was able to stop. John, it was awful.
Poor Kathy, poor baby.
Oh, hold me close. I'm so frightened.
Of course you are.
I told her her novels were terrible. And I told her something worse. I told her she didn't know anything about love.
Oh, boy, that was worse.
But she doesn't know anything about love, not the way we know it.
Look, I don't think it was a very good thing to tell her. Kathy, I think I better be getting on home.
Oh, must you?
Well, I think I better. What was that? Somebody knocking at the door.
Can't imagine who.
Kathy, may I come in, please?
It's Louise.
I need to talk to you, Kathy.
What do we do?
Leave it to me. Come in, Louise.
Thank you. Oh, John.
Hello, Louise.
I didn't expect to find you here, but maybe I should have. Maybe I've been stupid.
Oh, no, Louise.
I've been stupid about a lot of things, like I never knew till you told me, John, that I had the evil eye.
Louise.
When I think of what I've done, the power I've had, the power I've used, it's awful to contemplate.
Louise, don't think about it. You couldn't help it.
But I must help it. I must learn to control it. Are you two in love with each other?
Yes, we are.
We are, yes.
Well, then you have my blessing. I won't stand in your way.
Louise, you mean that?
With all my heart. I hope the two of you will be very happy.
Thank you.
And, Kathy, you don't have to show my last novel to the publishers if you don't want to.
Oh, but I do.
Well, it probably isn't very good anyway. Goodbye.
And with that, Louise turned and walked out. Out of the room and out of our lives. What had happened, as near as I can figure out, is that she had been so shocked and horrified by the realization of her power that she had turned completely in the opposite direction and was determined to become a saint.
It's John Bates again, and I'd like to add a few words. After all, I'm responsible for the whole thing. I was the one who taught Louise to say, I can and I will. Kathy and I are married now, and it's working out all right, I guess. But Kathy is a very powerful woman, too. And one of these days, I may have to say to myself, I can and I will. Then I'll go back to Louise, who has turned into a really very nice person.
How things are turned about in this world. The cheater becomes the cheated, the robbed becomes the robber, the perpetrator becomes the victim, and no one is satisfied, at least not for long. A very, very strange world indeed. But, alas, the only one we've got. I'll be back shortly.
When an orange says sun-kissed on the outside, you know it's juicy and sweet on the inside.
Eat sun-kissed sweet. It'll knock you off of your feet. It's so fresh and juicy, plump and a heavenly. Eat sun-kissed sweet.
Sink your teeth into a big, bursting, sweet, succulent, scintillating, juicy, vibrant, luscious, lip-smacking, mouth-watering, tongue-tickling, sun-kissed orange.
Ain't sun-kissed sweet.
Minutes seem like hours when you sometimes have trouble getting to sleep. Wouldn't you like to get to sleep fast? Announcing new Unisom. A different generation sleep aid. The only one with doxylamine. To our knowledge, Unisom is the only non-prescription sleep aid proven effective in clinical tests. When you sleep better, you feel better. For occasional sleeplessness, take new Unisom. Use only as directed.
I like pepperoni, but it doesn't like me.
Feel better fast with Digel.
With the ingredients in Digel, relief from acid indigestion and gas starts in less than a minute.
I like corned beef.
I like cabbage.
I like Frank's.
I like beans.
I like spaghetti.
And meatballs.
But they don't like me.
If you like something that doesn't like you,
feel better fast with Digel.
Digel relief starts in less than a minute. For occasional use only as directed.
CBS, we're gonna make your day.
CBS Television is gonna make your day. As one of America's most popular daytime dramas, The Young and the Restless, now becomes twice as special as it expands to 1 hour. Treat yourself to television's hottest dramatic show, The Young and the Restless, now a full hour every afternoon on CBS Television. Check your local listing for the right time.
CBS, we're gonna make your day.
Let me read to you one more time from the works of Blaise Pascal. What a chimera is man! What a novelty! What a monster! What a chaos! What a contradiction! What a prodigy! Judge of all things, feeble worm of the earth, depository of truth, a sink of uncertainty and error, the glory and the shame of the universe. Our cast included Carol Tytel, Mandel Kramer, and Terry Keane. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
WBBM Chicago. The following is a paid political announcement.
I'm Catherine Cook Anagnost. I need your vote to become the first woman to serve as Supreme Court Justice of Illinois. I am an attorney and not a politician. I have spent the past 32 years representing thousands of clients in all trial and appellate courts. I know how our judicial system should operate. On March 18th, I ask that you vote for me, Catherine Cook Anagnost, to add a third dimension to the Supreme Court.
Paid for by the committee to elect Catherine Cook Anagnost, Republican candidate for the Illinois Supreme Court.
CBS News, Kansas City firefighters walk out, leaving most of the city firehouses unmanned. I'm David Jackson reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The Monday night strike was called with very little notice. The firefighters are angry that the city won't rehire 42 firemen fired during a December slowdown. Mayor Dick Berkley says both sides have been trying to talk that problem out.
The negotiations have been going on until this rather drastic action, which is completely uncalled for on the part of the firefighters. They have a responsibility to protect the citizens of this city.
Now, non-union department officials and police are doing the protecting. Other U.S. mayors heard from President Carter in Washington Monday. He spoke to the League of Cities, looking for support of his new anti-inflation battle plan and explaining his new import fee on oil.
The conservation fee on oil alone will add to everyone's cost of driving. I know that. But along with the energy program, which is now nearing passage in the Congress and which will be expedited, it can help slash oil imports. This will not only help our nation directly, but will also lessen demand for scarce oil supplies and tend to stabilize the international petroleum markets.
International money and metals markets showed support for the new Carter economic strategy. The dollar was up Monday, gold down. But stock traders on Wall Street are worried. The Dow Industrials dropped 23 points, the largest one-day drop since October. The primary story in a minute.
A performance story. From Phillips Petroleum.
Dr. Stanley, what's your emergency?
Oh, Mike, we need the results back on that blood work right away.
Sure.
Okay.
I'm Lucy Rivera, an emergency room nurse here at Bayshore Hospital in Pasadena, Texas. Recently, we had an accident victim here in our emergency room. He had massive chest injuries, and his chest was filling with fluid so rapidly that he would have suffocated if we hadn't put him on chest drainage immediately. Our chest drainage system here uses a jar made out of a plastic from a company that supplies a lot of medical plastics, Philips. These jars are almost shatterproof. Thank goodness. You know, replacing a broken jar takes time, and some of our patients just don't have much time.
Phillips Petroleum. Good things for cars and the people who drive them.
The candidates are about done now in Illinois and waiting for Tuesday's delegate-rich primaries. There are non-binding preference polls, but Reed Collins tells us about the contests that count.
What binds is the election of delegates. Democrats to elect 152, Republicans 92. But there is a significant difference between the ballots. The Democratic delegates have the names of the candidates they support along with their names. The Republican delegate candidates' preferences are not shown on the ballot. Thus, it may be difficult, if not impossible, to determine right away how the Republican delegate race really went. The latest Chicago Tribune poll shows Reagan a slight popular favorite over Anderson, but the margin for error in the poll is greater than the difference. The same poll has Mr. Carter a 2-1 favorite over Senator Kennedy. One out of seven who plan to vote in the Republican primary confesses he's really a Democrat, a crossover intention which could bode well for Anderson. At today's St. Patrick's Day parade, there were boos when Mayor Jane Byrne of Chicago appeared on the reviewing stand. There was a mixture of applause and boos when Senator Kennedy was introduced along with her. She has promised to deliver Chicago's delegates to Kennedy. Tomorrow's result will be a stern test of the old Cook County capacity of the organization to deliver. Reed Collins, CBS News, Chicago.
Reagan Monday night ruled out rival John Anderson as the second half of a Reagan ticket. Anyone who runs with Anderson, said Reagan, would have to keep looking over his shoulder. A Western Oil Company drilling rig off the coast of Corpus Christi, Texas, began tilting Monday night. The Coast Guard now says it's tilted at a severe angle. 42 workers were aboard it. They've all been taken aboard a tug. No one has been hurt. More news in a minute.
CBS, we're gonna make your day.
CBS Television is gonna make your day as one of America's most popular daytime dramas, The Young and the Restless, now becomes twice as special as it expands to 1 hour. Treat yourself to television's hottest dramatic show, The Young and the Restless, now a full hour every afternoon on CBS Television. Check your local listing for the right time.
CBS, we're gonna make your day.
Is it worth what it costs to educate children with handicaps? Don't be emotional. Take a cold, hard look. Okay, the truth. It costs a lot. But not nearly so much as keeping people dependent for life. Besides, with special education, most handicapped children grow up to become taxpayers. A public service message on behalf of the United States Office of Education.
Britain's Parliament Monday night voted 315 to 147 to support a boycott of the Summer Olympic Games in Moscow. The vote was not without heated debate, including a strong protest from right-wing politicians who say a boycott is insufficient response to the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan and is unfair to British athletes anyway. The final decision in Britain, as in the U.S., lies with the country's Olympic Committee. David Jackson, CBS News.
This is your White Sox station, Sports Radio 78, WBBM Chicago.
Good evening, everyone. This is Alan Bickley on News Radio 78 in Chicago. It's 11:31 now. The weather outlook for Chicago, mostly fair tonight with a low of 21 degrees. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 45, down to 30 on Tuesday night. And then on Wednesday, partly sunny with a high in the middle 50s. At Midway Airport, it's 31 degrees. At the lakefront, 34. At O'Hare Field, 28. Wind from the northwest tonight, 18 miles an hour, and the wind chill is 3 above zero. The jury is still out in the tax fraud trial of Illinois Attorney General William Scott. Gene Schlesinger has joined me at the anchor desk with a report on today's deliberation.
Alan, the unanswered question of Scott's guilt or innocence continues to hang over him tonight, clouding his once bright political future. Scott had hoped for an acquittal before tomorrow's primary election, in which he's a candidate for the Republican nomination for the U.S. Senate. But after 3.5 days of deliberations totaling just over 30 hours, the jurors have still not reached a verdict. William Barnett, one of the attorneys on Scott's defense team, says he doesn't know whether the lengthy deliberations are a good sign.
I have no idea what the purview of the jury is at this particular point.
Scott is accused of understating his income by at least $52,000 on his tax returns from 1972 through 75. The jury resumes its deliberations at 9:30 tomorrow morning, 3.5 hours after the polls open. This is Regine Schlesinger.
And the news continues in just a moment.
The Marshall Fields Players present A Little History with the Wright Brothers.
Ready, Orville?
Ready, Wilbur.
How do you feel?
Great. I have a feeling today's the day we make aviation history.
Make what?
Aviation history.
What's aviation?
Never mind. But it is a special day, and that's why I decided to wear worsted.
Wear what?
Worsted.
What's worsted?
This suit. It's worsted wool.
Wool worsted?
Wool made the worsted way.
Is it new?
The worsted way?
No, the suit.
Oh, no.
Sure looks it.
Well, that's because it holds its shape so well.
Looks sharp.
Exactly. When I land this aeroplane, I want to be dressed in my best.
So you're dressed in your worsted.
Right.
That's what I call flying first class.
Wilbur, when you're right, you're right.
No, brother.
If you think you might make a little history today, wear Burlington Worsteds. Right now, you'll find Burlington's comfortable worsted blend tropical weight fabrics of Dacron polyester and worsted wool in fine men's clothing at Marshall Field's store for men.
Well, Orville, we made it.
We sure did.
And everyone loved your suit.
Yep.
Let's go home now.
Not yet, Wilbur.
Well, I don't think anyone else is coming. After all, you landed the plane an hour ago.
I know, but I'm still waiting for my luggage.
Chicago policemen will be compensated for the overtime they put in during the firefighter strike. Mayor Byrne has authorized cash payments for each canceled day off during the strike at the regular rate of pay. The officers will also retain 8 hours of compensatory time for each canceled day off. Normally, police officers receive compensatory time off for overtime work instead of cash. The rides, games, and amusements at the old Chicago shopping mall in Bolingbrook have been shut down. But the retail stores in the center will remain open. A spokesman for the people who own the mall refused to say why the rides were shut down, but the firm that issued the original construction loan for the mall says the amusement park was shut down because it is no longer profitable. Foreclosure proceedings filed in Will County Court today say the mall's owners owe IC Leasing Incorporated of Chicago more than $25.5 million in principal and interest. IC Leasing wants to obtain clear title to the building and may consider selling it and using it for other purposes. Senator Edward Kennedy received a less than cordial welcome from several onlookers who gathered along the State Street Mall to view Monday's St. Patrick's Day parade. Bob Crawford reports.
Senator Kennedy was greeted with a mixture of cheers and boos as he worked the crowds along State Street during the parade. Zigzagging back and forth across the street with his wife Joan at his side and frantic Secret Service men in hot pursuit, Kennedy kept a disciplined smile on his face despite occasional choruses of catcalls, and he was doing his best to show no concern by bantering briefly with reporters about the absence of President Carter.
Wonderful day here. Everybody ought to come out here, even the President of the United States. Today we got St. Patrick's, stop the rain, stop the snow. We got a warm chair here, and it's delighted to be back in Chicago.
The president didn't come. Why do you think he didn't come?
No, he's missing being with a lot of good friends here, a lot of good Democrats, too.
Along the route, Kennedy was occasionally greeted with great warmth by pockets of young people. But at other spots, there were shouts of go back to Chappaquiddick and chants of we want Carter, we want Carter. This is Bob Crawford.
Before the parade, Chicagoans gathered at St. Patrick's Church on West Adams Street for the traditional St. Patrick's Day Mass. Among them was State Senator Richard Daley. He's running against Alderman Edward Burke for the Democratic nomination in the state's attorney's race. And he feels he'll win because of his integrity.
You know what it is? It's decency. And keeping your word. I've been in politics. My dad, in politics, Republican opponents and independents, it's called decency, and it's called keeping your word to people. And I think people are just can't understand what is happening today, and I have a lot of support from people who truly believe in the political system.
At least 100,000 Chicagoans brave snowflakes and chilly temperatures to view the politician-studded parade down State Street.
The police have distributed composite sketches of six people wanted in connection with the Saturday morning takeover of the Carter-Mondale campaign headquarters in the Loop. Puerto Rican nationalists briefly took over the offices and held several campaign workers hostage. One of those has been tentatively identified as 36-year-old Oscar Lopez, a federal fugitive wanted on charges of 16 Chicago bombings. Illinois Congressman Philip Crane, who was running far behind the pack in the GOP presidential campaign, attacked Congressman John Anderson, saying he is totally out of the mainstream of the Republican Party. Crane also criticized Anderson for encouraging Democrats to cross over and vote in Republican primaries. Says Crane, he's eroding the purpose of the two-party system. Crane predicted that Wisconsin and Oregon would be the end of the line for Anderson's campaign. California Governor Ronald Reagan had refused to rule out many of his rivals for the GOP presidential nomination as a running mate until tonight. Speaking before an audience in New Britain, Connecticut this evening, Reagan says that if he is the Republican nominee for president, he will not select rival Illinois Congressman John Anderson as his running mate. Reagan has been increasingly critical of Anderson, who he says might consider switching to the Democratic Party because of his philosophy. Earlier in the day, Reagan appeared before the Chicago Council on Foreign Relations to deliver what he called a major foreign policy address. It contained little that was new and few specifics. Keith Bromrey reports.
Ronald Reagan told several hundred members of the Chicago Council on Foreign Relations that if he gets the Republican presidential nomination and from there is elected president, he would institute a foreign policy consisting of three major points, including a belief in the future of America, a strong economy, and the military presence to preserve the peace. And he would also like to see the office of the presidency have a freer hand to act in instances such as in Iran and Afghanistan.
I believe that due to events that have taken place in the past, while I want the utmost of cooperation with the Congress, I believe that in the separation of powers was a little eroded to the point that the man who is singly responsible as Commander-in-Chief, the President of the United States, is unnecessarily restrained by Congress at the moment.
Reagan said he would also revitalize the nation's intelligence agencies and reinstitute planning for future Irans and Afghanistans. Reagan maintained that his views with regard to foreign policy more closely reflect those of the Congress than the Carter administration's, making it easier, he predicted, to get his plans approved. From the Prudential Building, this is Keith Bromery.
Republican Congressman John Anderson, whose party loyalty has been questioned by Ronald Reagan, sharpened his attack on Reagan today. Anderson pointed out that the former California governor failed to campaign for former President Gerald Ford in 1976. Anderson also said that Reagan advocates what he called the economic policies of Calvin Coolidge. Anderson's new tone of militance came one day after the Chicago Tribune published a poll showing Reagan ahead of Anderson by 2 points, with former U.N. Ambassador George Bush trailing both. The Tribune said its survey, which has a 6% margin for error, meant that the Republican race was too close to call. Anderson's campaign manager said today that if there is an unusually large turnout of 1 million voters, he believes his man will win. In his tour around the state today, Anderson also emphasized his own party loyalty and said he could support Reagan as the GOP nominee if the Californian alters some of his political opinions. In recent days, Reagan and other GOP candidates have sharply questioned Anderson's party loyalty and Republican orthodoxy. The Republican blind primary isn't the only thing confusing about tomorrow's primary. The delegate slates of both major political parties provide some befuddling, if not humorous, possibilities. For example, in the 20th Congressional District, Brown wants to be a Kennedy delegate to the National Convention, not California Governor Jerry Brown, but Don Brown of Springfield. Another Brown, Evett Brown of Chester, is backing President Carter. On the Republican side, Kennedy, that's Daniel Kennedy of Springfield, is backing Philip Crane. In the 24th District, John Anderson backs George Bush. That's John T. Anderson, not John B. Anderson, the presidential candidate. John T. worked as a consultant for John B., but thinks Bush would make a better president. WBBM News Times 1140, the following a paid political announcement.
David Shippers is a candidate to believe in. This is Doug Plank of the Chicago Bears, and David Shippers is asking for your support in the primary election to be held March 18th for Illinois State Supreme Court judge. Many are not aware that more individual rights are decided by the court than any other office. It is not a political office and does not require a politician to fill it. David Shippers is not a politician. He is a lawyer who has practiced in federal and state courts at all levels. Your vote is important in electing the right person to that office. The Illinois Supreme Court is the highest judicial office and needs a dedicated lawyer to fill it. I believe David Shippers is that lawyer. He is running as an independent Democrat and needs your support. We who realize how important our constitutional rights are should support David Shippers with our vote. Our welfare will always be protected.
This is David Shippers, and I wholeheartedly ask for your support for Illinois State Supreme Court Justice.
Paid for by Citizens for Shippers. Spectrum in 1 minute.
Morning, Mrs. Hanson. What can I do for you today?
Well, Mr. Gossett, my Jimmy is 17 now, and he'll be graduating from high school real soon.
Little Jimmy, my, how time flies.
Yes, it does.